From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on the campus of the University of Rochester when a woman noticed a lack of imagery dedicated to one of the very people who made it possible for women to attend her university. In the early 1900s, the U of R required $50,000 before they would admit women, and Susan B. Anthony was integral in raising that money, even pledging her $8,000 life insurance policy in the hours before she died. And so, back to the woman in question here, a woman named Sarah Rutherford. She didn't see much in the way of celebrating Susan B. Anthony or women's achievements when it came to art around campus. Think about statues, think about murals we see, think about that all across our community. What do you typically see? What she saw was mostly men. That's what we often do. So she had an idea, a mural depicting both younger and older versions of Susan B., painted on the backdrop of a blooming dandelion, the school's flower, with its seeds floating toward a young woman, presumably a student. And if you've walked through the tunnels of the U of R, you've probably seen this mural, but she didn't stop there. This past spring, 2 years after that first mural, she founded Her Voice Carries, a public art project culminating in a series of murals located throughout five sections of the city of Rochester. The intention? To create a network of murals that weave a collective story laced with individual truths. A foster mother dedicated to loving every child, a Somalian refugee working as an emergency translator, a yoga teacher to low-income students. While the lives of these subjects range in experience, the idea is that they all emphasize what is possible under the leadership of empowered women. And we're going to discuss the stories behind those murals this hour. Our guest in studio, Sarah Rutherford, is here, the artist behind the project. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Her assistant, her artist apprentice, is Maribel Hernandez, who is here with us as well. Maribel, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Also here is Imani O'Lear, founder of Yoga for a Good Hood. Imani, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Safi Osman, emergency translator for Refugees Helping Refugees. Safi, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Sarah, let's go back to that story, because I think I'm probably with the vast majority of people who don't know that story about Susan B. and raising money and thinking about women going to university. So take me back to you know, your thoughts about that story and what was kind of going through your mind as you walked across campus.
Yeah, well, as I was walking around the university, I really did notice a lack of visual representation of kind of her legacy. You know, there were some buildings named after her, et cetera, but I really didn't see any visual imagery. So I was trying to think about showing her legacy, but also thinking about how it translates to today, you know, by really bringing the past into the future. So that was kind of where that mural came from. And then beyond that, I was trying to think about, could this idea translate to Rochester as a whole, you know, beyond the halls of the university? And that's kind of where I began to plan how to branch it out into the community, into different neighborhoods.
You ever think about if Susan B. were walking around today and she were looking around seeing the same kind of art and iconography that we have now, what she would think?
You know, I actually don't know if I have, which is, I mean, I appreciate that insight, but yeah.
What do you think she would think?
Well, see, I don't know. It's interesting. I think that there's this this legacy that we are gifted with here in Rochester. But I also think it's kind of, you know, it is comes with complication. It is also kind of a complicated history, you know, even in terms of the suffragette movement and really how, you know, it was really led by these white women. I was kind of interested in thinking about, what do we do with this legacy now? How do we translate this to today? And how do we kind of work on a lot of the problems that were left for us in many ways?
And so when you first undertook that project with Susan B., again, that story of her raising the money, I guess she was dying, was even thinking about a life insurance policy?
It was one of her very last things that she did. So I think that is something that I didn't know before I went to walk the halls and learn about that history. I didn't actually know about it. So I felt like it was a piece of history that we don't always hear about. And it maybe not even many of the women walking the halls really realized. So you know, and that was like 100 years ago. I mean, it's not really that long ago. So that's why I felt like it was an important starting point.
It almost sounds like ransom. Like, you know, we'll consider allowing women if X ransom is paid.
Yeah, it was kind of a challenge that they thought she wouldn't meet, and then she did.
Amazing.
So some of the first women that graduated or were enrolled were her pallbearers at her funeral.
Tell me a little bit about that the Susan B. mural first.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was 2 years ago. And again, you know, you did a great job describing it. So I really appreciate that. But, you know, the dandelion is a school flower. So it's this idea of inspiration spreading from throughout history, you know, and really kind of taking the vibrations of the past and putting them into the future. So the idea is that this college age woman of today is also blowing those seeds off into, you know, her legacy.
And then the idea grows here. And so let's go back to, I guess, this past spring. It starts more in earnest?
Yeah. So, it took about 2 years to plan the whole project. I spoke to a lot of different women. Really, the idea behind the project was thinking about also building connection in Rochester. So I wanted to feature a different woman from each quadrant plus Center City and then paint them in a different quadrant from where they lived. I kind of went around, talked to all these different amazing women. Every single woman could have been featured. But I really tried to focus on, again, the geography and then also women that were lifting up the voices of others.
I love the idea, by the way, of choosing the four quadrants, Center City, and then painting them in a different place from where they typically are. In my mind, I think I've got my own assumptions about why you did that, which I love, but I want to hear it from you. Why did you do it that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, and actually every woman I chose is well-known within their own circle and within their own community, but I was really interested in sharing their story with Rochester as a whole and trying to build these connections on a citywide level. You know, after doing a lot of different mural work in different public spaces, it really showed me how, you know, divided our city is. And I was hoping to really, you know, build this network of murals that people would travel and consider the city as a whole and not just these disparate parts.
How big are the murals?
They're very large. I didn't actually expect to be picking the largest buildings ever, but I did end up with a lot of large murals. So the last one I just did of Imani was 60 feet by 40 feet. And then there's also another 20 by 40 foot structure that I also added to that. So they're all quite large.
We're going to hear what Imani thinks coming up here about a 60 by 40 foot. That's big, you know?
Yes,
and,
it is.
You're going to, we'll make sure you know where to find them as well, because I think part of the goal of the artist is to not only allow people who might be there to kind of stumble upon it, but also for people to seek them out.
Yeah. And there's also a mural at the Memorial Art Gallery, which features all five women plus a map of the city and with all the mural locations. So the hope is that people will maybe go to the mag, see all these different stories, and then go find them out in the community. So again, adding yet another point to the travel and to thinking about our city as a whole.
And it's a 2-year project. I don't want to assume too much here, but at least I'm guessing that as an artist, when you think about wanting to elevate the public consciousness of women who are doing remarkable things in our community, it must be interesting for you to see at least the national conversation about respect for women, empowering women in especially the last year. And there's a lot that's happened, not just in relation to Me Too, but in other ways of kind of putting forward women more often, or at least an awareness of the need to do that. Were you aware of that, or were you sort of in your artist's kind of bunker?
I think in my bones I was aware of that, because I'm a woman, you know?
Yeah.
I think that a lot of this has been happening in real time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that when I was painting the mural on Planned Parenthood in May of Rachel McKibbins, it was very timely because so much was really focused even around their funding. I mean, that's always been a fight, but it felt very, very real and very present. So everything about this project has just made sense. You know, it's kind of, I've been kind of following the project. The project's leading me because it needs to happen.
We're going to hear from Safi Osman and Imani O'Lear coming up here. Those are just two of the women that Sarah chose to highlight. So tell me just to make sure we understand, because you could have done so many more.
And I will do so many more.
And you will do more.
I think that's the point to remember as well. This is just the beginning.
But for you to decide who makes the cut, ultimately, you're thinking about everything. And what is it about Imani? What is it about Safi? What is it about the women that you chose?
I tried to focus on women that were lifting up the voices of others. I just think that that's such an important thing to be celebrated right now, and a thing that's often not celebrated, especially in public space. If we don't see each other, I mean, that's what it's all about right now. I think that all of the women's stories that I heard from could have been featured and should be featured, you know. But again, I think I was trying to think about where they were located, you know, geography-wise, different a variety of life stories, you know, to kind of add to this really all the individual stories adding to this collective narrative. So, you know, just trying to think about them in relation to one another. And then I tried to think about pairing them with their walls and really having that make sense. You know, so putting Rachel McKibbins on Planned Parenthood was just a given for me in terms of kind of her, the work that she does and kind of the women's voices that she lifts up. It just made sense. You know, putting Imani on the Charles Settlement House, Imani has this deep sense of empathy for so many people, and it just made sense. The Charles Settlement serves, you know, from children to elderly, so it made sense that she would fit on that wall. So that's kind of even a step further that I tried to really make sure each woman fit on the wall that I placed them on.
How hard was it to decide to essentially make the cut?
Well, I mean, that's why it took 2 years, you know, and it was incredibly, incredibly difficult.
You're going to tell us who's coming next here?
Oh, well, so
you've got a long list.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the other point is I really want to take this on a national and international scale. Mm-hmm. So it felt important to me to start it in Rochester, the place that supported me as an artist and really allowed me to grow in the past 10 years I've lived here. So it made sense to start it here. It's kind of my love letter to Rochester.
Where might it go?
You know, I really love the idea of it traveling to cities that are similar to Rochester, so not these, like, big-name cities, but, you know, kind of the scrappy cities. That's kind of why I love Rochester. We're a little scrappy here. I would really love to think about kind of our country in that same way, you know, bringing together maybe areas that on paper maybe don't look the same but really have a lot of underlying currents of similarity.
And Sarah, for people who wonder about process, they may be wondering, well, how do you get access to big spaces and buildings like that?
I mean, I think I've been working really hard in our community to make a name for myself as a public artist and done a lot of groundwork. Mm-hmm. So again, I think this is a culmination of 10 years of work in the city, really leading me to this point. That's, again, why it took so long. I presented to boards. I met with organizations. I mean, you know, I worked with Planned Parenthood. I worked with Charles Settlement House. A lot of these organizations, Reformation Church, you know, just really trying to kind of prove what I was trying to do before I could do it, you know, so it was definitely a process.
And the murals will stay there for how long?
As long as they're there, you know. I mean, you know, by default, paint is ephemeral, you know, it's not going to last 100 years. But the really great part is Dave Marshall from Blue Sky Project is doing a film about the whole process, as well as all the stories of the women. So Hannah Betts photographed everything. I mean, it's about the story as much as it's about the physical murals.
All right. Well, Maribel, for you as an artist apprentice, you got to get close to that mic here. I know, you know, don't be shy here. I want to know what it was like working on these projects, 60 feet by 40 feet, you know, projects like that. Tell me what it was like for you.
Well, that was a little bit to overcome. Definitely the boom lift was scary.
You've been on a boom lift before?
With Sarah, yeah.
She even drove it. She got good at driving it.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tap myself on the back. But it was a really good opportunity. I mean, I'm hoping to further my career in this. Sarah's a really cool boss. She taught me everything that I know. And I really appreciate everything and the opportunity that she gives me.
How did you guys get hooked up?
So I was in high school, and there was a program called Rock Paint Division that I was that I applied for. And then I did that for, I think it was the summer of 2016.
Like 2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. And after that, she saw potential in me, and I just helped her out with a few things.
And here you are now, and can you tell me what you think of what you see with these murals now? How do you think they came out?
Awesome. I mean, Sarah's work is really good, so I had a lot of faith in her.
Well, Sarah is someone who really walks the walk, you know, reaching out to students, giving them an opportunity to work with her, thinking about voices in our community, that probably deserve more than so many others to be lifted up in a world that doesn't always lift up the voices that should have the spotlight. So let's do a couple of things here. First of all, hervoicecarries.blog. Mm-hmm. Hervoicecarries.blog. Check it out, and you can see a lot of the work there. And if you're heading out today, you may be in the neighborhood of some of these. So can you give us the locations before we talk to some of the subjects?
Sure, yeah. And there is actually a map on the blog as well. It's just awesome. So there's a little link there and something that you could actually print out. But there's one on Planned Parenthood at 114 University Ave. There's one in the Susan B. Anthony neighborhood, 548 West Main Street. There's one on Reformation Lutheran Church, 111 North Chestnut Street. And then on the Charles Settlement House, 71 Parkway. And then at the Memorial Art Gallery, in the Herbert Gallery, part of it.
And again, in the Memorial Art Gallery, you can see that map. You see all five?
Yeah, so the final mural is going to be happening in the spring. That's going to be featuring Kaylin Rich, so that'll kind of end cap the whole project.
Gotcha.
So for right now, you can find four out in the community plus the Memorial Art Gallery.
Well, we mentioned Omani O'Leary. She's the founder of Yoga for a Good Hood. How do you know Omani? So from the artist perspective, tell me how you kind of get hooked up with Omani.
Well, again, I kind of went on this. I started with a lot of community leaders in different quadrants, and then they would recommend people. So I went on this kind of chain of finding different people. And so Omani was recommended to me. And I knew from the minute I spoke to her that I wanted to feature her and that I had a lot to learn from this beautiful, inspiring woman. So, and that's just deepened the longer I've gotten to know her.
All right, Omani. Well, that's big praise here.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your work first, and we've got a lot more to talk about.
So Yoga for a Good Hood kind of came out of my seeing that there was lack of diversity in all kinds of ways into the yoga world. So whether it was economic backgrounds, people of color, just a safe space where they can explore their body, whether it was a person who was obese or not. You don't see that a lot of times in a pair of Lululemon pants, which is unfortunate. And so I wanted a safe space to explore that, particularly once I heard, you know, Rochester is fifth in poverty. And so everyone should have access to a time, a place, a space to just be able to breathe. And so here comes Yoga for a Good Hood. And so our little tagline is, we change the world one downward dog at a time. And so it just is just allowing ourselves some time to just breathe.
I've read that that you thought that when you began yoga teacher certification, you were kind of pigeonholed by peers because you didn't look like an average yogi. What does an average yogi look like?
Not this. And now you can see it on a 60-foot wall.
Yeah.
But as a person of color, one of the things that I'm clear on is that on average, I don't see people of color in the yoga studio. And that has me curious. And part of it is that I don't think that the message always translates well to people of color in a yoga studio, or even if it's accessibility. The average cost of a class can be problematic. Now, I work for a studio that I also love, but I'm privileged enough to be able to afford it, and also strong enough to stand in the midst of a room where there isn't a lot of people that look like me. So that began to begin the conversation with myself with how can I create that safe space for others.
Yoga is pretty white.
Yes.
It's pretty wealthy.
Yes. It has become that.
It wasn't always or supposed to be that way.
No.
That's not the history.
I mean, the other thing about yoga is if we look into the sutras, that the asana, which is just the movements, was never what the yoga was supposed to be about. What it was supposed to be about is looking at the internal stuff that we have going on all the time, the chatter in our brain. And so how can we calm that down? And so people were sitting and meditating, and then their muscles atrophied because they were trying to figure out their true self. So they said, oh, we may need to move a little bit. And that's how yoga kind of came out of that. But it was about self-expression, not how good your butt looks, right? It was the movements were just a way to deepen ourselves into more knowing. And then when I know myself better, I can know you better because I see me in you and I can love you instead of holding all kinds of judgment on you.
Where did yoga begin?
India. And so I had the blessing to go to Rishikesh and do some work in an ashram. And there was something very beautiful about being in the chaoticness of it and finding these safe places of movement and exploration. And I wanted to bring that back here to Rochester as well, that the chaoticness of Rochester and just like Sarah sees possibility in people, I see the possibility of what yoga can bring to people.
Imani, I'm curious to know if you have spent any time thinking about themes that we see in other places regarding cultural appropriation with yoga. You know, because as you say, it's become white and wealthy.
Yes.
In this country. Mm-hmm. That's not the origin of it.
No.
Is that okay?
Well, so one thing that I always try to do, so I'm going to qualify my answer to that, is every day before meditation, when I enter into my meditation time, I say I sit in the seat of neutrality, that nothing is neither good or bad. And so in my neutral statement, I say that this is a lesson. This is an opportunity for lesson. This is an opportunity to see what we value. And if we don't value humans over all the stuff that we can acquire, then it has served its purpose, like, right? Like all the commercialism around yoga and all that that means. If that means that this is an opportunity to learn deeper about who we are, okay. Then it serves its purpose. If we're not going to learn from it, then we better watch out.
And so what I want to talk a little bit about is how we get yoga to more people, which is part of what you do, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, I recall just a couple of months ago, the United States is not playing in the next World Cup. They didn't qualify. And there was this hand-wringing. How could we be a nation of 330 million people and not find the athletes to field a good enough soccer team to qualify? And then the conversation said, well, we have that many people. But it's become this wealthy sport because you have to do all of these different things. You have to get this equipment. You have to have your kids not in one league with school, but also private travel leagues and all of these things. And it becomes pretty exclusive.
Yes.
The criticism was it became a country club kind of thing, and you limit the pool of people who are possible, and we should not be surprised. But it wasn't meant to be. And you look around the world, and soccer is this egalitarian sport where, you know, people who are some of the most talented people in the world did not come from money. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't have become like that in this country, but it sort of did. And maybe there's a lesson to learn. Do you see that has happened to yoga, that it wasn't supposed to not be accessible to everybody?
Yes. However, I think that that is also an access point for everyone, right? Like that. So I work at a studio as well, and I see people evolving. It may have entered in one way, and then as they continue their practice, they evolve. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to hold judgment on money, because that's just, for me, that would be silly to hold judgment on that. But the other side of it is, when it becomes inaccessible for a whole group of people, I think that's problematic. That's with anything. And so how can we narrow that? And so Yoga for a Good Hood begins to narrow that just a little bit to allow some space for people. So I don't see it as good or bad. And I'm very clear about that because, again, I have privilege as well. I don't have the same privileges. But I can enter into a jail and give yoga to women that have felt breathless, have felt tired, used, exploited, and speak a message that their true identity is one of so much love and forgiveness. I can say the same thing to the woman who has $250,000 into her bank account easy and say, here's your true identity. And that's what yoga does. I'm just trying to narrow the divide.
What are some of the reactions? What are some of the great things you've seen happen through Yoga for a Good Hood?
Oh, so much. From people like rallying. Well, first, let me back up. Mm-hmm. I am learning, like as Sarah, like Maribel said about Sarah seeing possibility in her. That Sarah sees possibility. I had Yoga for a Good Hood as just this very narrow focus. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to throw some yoga around. That's all. I'm just sprinkling some love seeds, right, all over the place. And she saw possibility in me. And she saw that. And I'm going, she's like, because you're seeing possibility in other people. So that's why I see, you know, like it was this wonderful little moment. And so part of my goal and what fuels me is, oh, okay. I see possibility. And that's all that the yoga does. The yoga is about seeing possibility or what's next in a very faith-filled way and whatever that may look like, which also is part of my faith as a pastor as well, right? Like, you know, I'm also this yoga pastor girl that sees faith everywhere and opportunity and possibility.
All right, so what do you want this to grow into? Yoga for a Good Hood?
I want yoga to touch everyone. I do. I believe yoga is for everyone. I mean, I'm excited about Safi coming over to the church and figuring out a downward dog for her and the refugees. I'm excited about that there becomes a place for people of color to express themselves and do and experience yoga for themselves authentically. I'm excited about the person that is in recovery, of coming in there and feeling safe and that they can have access free of charge, right? I'm excited about the rubbing elbows with persons that have money, right? Or whatever that story is that they tell themselves, and that we're all in one place together, not in some kumbaya kind of way, right? Because I think that is... Well, and so, but I that they begin to see each other. We don't see each other anymore. And that's what the yoga does. We begin to see, oh, that's not a drug dealer. That's a human being. Oh, that's not a woman with a membership to Midtown. That is someone that is another human being. That's not a, you know, like it's bridging the gap.
I love that. I get it, Sarah. I see why.
Right?
Why you wanted Imani on a mural. So, but you were introduced to Imani. You didn't know her before you started the process.
No.
How long did it take for you to know, oh my gosh, yes, Imani O'Lear needs to be on a mural?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like it was a no-brainer. It was 2 minutes in. I knew that I wanted to feature her. And then, I mean, you hear her speak. You hear how inspirational her words are. And I felt I just wanted to share that with a greater audience.
Do you do yoga?
I do. Yes. I do when I've come. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, coming to her Yoga for Good Hood class is an incredibly powerful experience that is unmatched in Rochester.
You've seen some of what she's talking about?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Maddie's come to a class as well.
Yes.
And Charisse, my other assistant.
I have. I'm not that good, but I try.
Oh, no.
You are that good. You are that good, my love.
See, and you know, Imani, that's what I think a lot of people say, maybe the host included. Things like this. I'm not very flexible. Or... I don't think I'd be good. You want to address that real quick?
Yes. How can you ever become flexible if you never do anything about it?
Well, I have the bone and muscular tone of a crowbar. It's just not going to move.
Well, let me. So part of my story is that I have lupus, I have rheumatoid arthritis, and Raynaud's syndrome. The other thing about that I don't look like the average yogi is that my hips don't do the same thing that most of my students can do, right? And it's not about that. Yoga is about releasing and unleashing what's in here deep. And so, no, can I do the even what they call a basic pose warrior two? Some days not, because my hips hurt and they're cranky. But now I have renamed my hips Glorious. Because they are.
I totally want to go.
Come on.
It's so good. You're hearing Imani O'Lear, who's founder of Yoga for a Good Hood, pastor at Reformation Lutheran Church, an author, public speaker, And she is featured in a mural. You're going to see the mural of Imani where?
It's at the Charles Settlement House on Parkway, 71 Parkway.
So what did you think when you saw it?
I wept. I'm starting to well up now. Just thinking about, Sarah has this incredible ability of seeing you. And that is always a gift, how she sees you. And she leads with her heart in how she paints everything. And I was like, that's me? And it's humbling and it's inspiring. It drives me. And I'm just grateful.
I can't figure out why. I mean, she started with Susan B. Anthony, and then she had to narrow the cut to five other women to go alongside Susan B. Anthony,
right.
And you're one of them. So, you know, it's amazing. It's just great stuff. And let me ask a question from Gary, who writes to the program and says, the past is or can be prologue, and Rochester seems not to always be connected to its progressive past. Is your guest Sarah from Rochester? Is this something Rochesterians are not always appreciative because we're too close to it? Thanks for reconnecting us to our past. That's from Gary.
I am not from Rochester. I'm from the Boston area, but I've lived here for 10 years, and I really think it's the first place that I have considered my home. I've really kind of embraced it, and it's embraced me.
That's great. You agree with Gary that sometimes we get so close to things that it's hard to appreciate?
It's hard to see ourselves, right? I mean, it's the same thing with someone else seeing you. You sometimes can bring things out that you couldn't see in yourself.
Well, let's get our only break of the hour. It's Her Voice Carries is the theme behind these murals, and we'll make sure, again, we keep letting you know where you can find them, but jump online at hervoicecarries.blog to take a look at some of the work and to find yourself a map and to head out, because you don't want to just be driving by. It's the kind of thing where it'd be a really meaningful thing to kind of drive around and take it in and really appreciate that. So you're hearing Imani O'Lear, Maribel Hernandez, and Sarah Rutherford are the muralists behind some of the amazing work here. Safi Osman's gonna talk to us after our only break of the hour, a founding member of Refugees Helping Refugees, and she is featured in a mural in the Southwest Quadrant. So let's go ahead and get that only break of the hour and come back and hear Safi's story next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, how about a different way forward in politics? How about an alternative to partisanship? Can we do it? Is it realistic, or is that too pie in the sky? Howard Konar is a local man who wrote a book called Common Ground, An Alternative to Partisan Politics. His prescriptions on a way forward, interesting stuff. We'll work through it. And then NPR's Hanukkah Lights special. That's Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Sarah Rutherford, the artist behind Her Voice Carries. You can find her work in a lot of places and Instagram as well, yes?
Yeah, at Her Voice Carries to kind of follow the up to the minute news.
At Her Voice Carries. How long does it take, by the way, to do a single mural?
So each of the murals took about 2 to 3 weeks to complete, you know, pretty steady amount of work from the time the sun came up to the sun went down. The last mural took longer on the Charles Settlement House just because of the weather changing and the scale, needing the boom lift, et cetera, et cetera.
And so what's the actual material that you're working with?
I use latex paint. I use spray paint. Yeah.
Okay. And how do you decide, I guess, different building surfaces have different kind of like textures to them,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, it's very, I mean, the beautiful part about working on murals is that you're really interacting with your environment and having to kind of play off what's already there. So like for the Charles Settlement House, I mean, it had many different layers to it, so I had to work with that. The mural in the Susan B. Anthony neighborhood had a very textured wall. So it can be a challenge, but I think that's what I find beautiful about it and exciting. You have control, but you don't have full control.
And you're so patient with my ignorance over artistic matters. But I am curious to know, when you're doing something that's even 60 by 40, or even from, in my view, a large, pretty large scale, you got to be really confident going in that everything is, you know, going to be where you want it, that you've got, I mean, I guess what I'm asking is you really want to get it right the first time at 60 by 40.
Sure. I mean, but you also come up against these moments where it's kind of like the ugly stage of a painting, as I like to call it, but you're in public and people can see it and people can judge it. And you kind of have to grow stronger, grow a little tougher, you know. and kind of have these conversations with yourself, but while everyone's looking in public space. And that can be very, very challenging, but also empowering.
Do you like it when people are stopping to ask what's going on?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm working in the public space. It is about the art, but it's about the project and the community and the woman I'm painting. And, you know, it's definitely part of it. It can become challenging when you're trying to actually produce something, when you have to stop and, you know, answer the same questions and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that's kind of what it's all about, is navigating that space.
Let me grab a phone call. This is Danielle on the line. Go ahead, Danielle.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to take a moment. Sarah Rutherford is an incredible artist. We're so lucky to have her in our community, and she's doing such a beautiful job of seeing the praises of all the women featured in this project. But we really must take a moment to celebrate her as an individual. I've had the pleasure of watching her and evolve over this project for a while now, and we must appreciate how much personal energy and effort she's put into this to be so authentic, to represent these women and these communities in the most authentic way that can possibly be done. And that takes a lot of thought and energy. And Sarah has done that. She has put her heart and soul into this. This is truly a love letter to Rochester from her. And I just want to compliment her on being an extraordinary artist, an extraordinary advocate for this community, and doing it in such a way that is so beautiful, again, authentic, and to see people in the way that they deserve to be seen. So, Sarah, praise to you for being this incredible goddess, as you are, as you praise these other goddesses in our community. You deserve every bit of recognition.
Very nice. Thank you, Danielle.
Yeah,
Danielle. That's a nice sentiment. You probably hate, you know, being in the spotlight yourself. You're the kind of person who loves to throw it on other people, aren't you?
I do. It's true.
So let's talk more about you for a second.
No, I'm good. I'm set.
That was a very nice phone call. The project is Her Voice Carries, and as we turn to Safi Osman, I want you to know where, again, maybe you're listening to us in a car right now and you're not that far away from some of these murals, but let's do it again. Let's hit where all of the murals are.
Sure. Well, I'll start with Safi's. You can check that out on Reformation Church. It is, let me just get the address. It's 111 North Chestnut Street. There's 548 West Main Street in the Susan B. Anthony neighborhood, featuring Trelawney McCoy. 114 University Ave, featuring Rachel McKibbins. 71 Parkway, featuring Emmanuel Lear. And then stay tuned for the final in the spring, featuring Kaylin Rich. And then also the Memorial Art Gallery.
Very good. Well, Safi Osman is a founding member of Refugees Helping Refugees. And Safi, why don't you kind of take us back to when Refugees Helping Refugees was founded. When was that?
In the first, we're working in Somali community, Western New York. So when the community became bigger, we changed the name, and we make another name, Refugee Helping Refugee, because we know who is the refugee and what they need and what happened to the refugee and why they came in the United States. That's why we changed the name.
Change the name, and it's Refugees Helping Refugees. Safi is known as Mama Safi. She teaches sewing skills, does emergency translation, transport refugees in need, and they call you just about any time? I mean, you're always available for them, Safi?
Yes. Most of refugee in Rochester, they know my name and my phone number. So they call me when they need a grocery, and they don't know where they go. And when some schools call and say, your kid is sick, it won't feel good, they call me, and I have to take the parents to the school and bring back with the kids to home. And I make transportation, I make translator, I make house visiting. I try my best how to helping refugee, because I came as a refugee, and I know what they need, and I can't ignore it, what I know they need.
When did you come as a refugee?
I came 1996 in United States.
What was the most difficult change for you?
On time they I came in United States, I had 5 kids and their father. And it was difficulty because first of all, I came in United States because I tried to save my life and my kids and their father's life, because I was scared from my country and a refugee camp also. And when I came to United States, I feel safe. So after that, I try to survive and do whatever I can do. So that's most of time, that's why I try to helping anyone need me.
Safia is bundled up for the winter, and we all are. Is this a hard time of year for you, for other refugees? Do you get used to the change? And I would like to know if you have gotten used to Rochester, if you like Rochester.
I like Rochester because I came from Minnesota, because Minnesota is too cold than
one of the only colder places.
Yes, it's more cold in Rochester and more slippery and a more difficult life in Rochester. So I know how to drive. I know how to go wherever I go.
Do you feel that this community does enough to welcome refugees?
They don't have choice, but that's why we try to helping them. And also, we don't have enough in transportation. We don't have enough space to do whatever we have to do. On that first time, I was started in a training. I was a teacher of training sewing machines, and when they learn sewing machines, we send the people the factory, sewing factories, so they hiring when they get a taste. After that, still we make some days, 2 days a week, they learn sewing machine. Morning, they learn English, and after all English, they go in 2 days sewing machine, and 2 days, 1 day, they go in cooking class, because we have to show them which cooking good, nutrition, and something not good for their kids, not for the elder people. So that's why sometimes, like once a week, we make, they call it speaker person. So we call, invited police, so they can tell what's going on, what's illegal in the United States, what they have to do. If they saw the police, don't scare it. Don't running out, don't hiding anything. So the police talk to them and give it to advice what's good, what's bad. Mm. And one day we invited the doctors or the nurses, and they explained what some medication is don't take for someone else. It's illegal. Some anyway, anything good for their healthy, and something not good healthy, they explain. You know, some weeks we make elder, we call elder people, mm-hmm. and tell, did or ask, did you have any abuse in home? Mm-hmm. Did you have help? And most of them, I say, oh, what you need? I need eye doctor. Okay, give me your phone number your birthday and your name, your last name. And I made appointment, and I go home, go their home and pick up to the eye doctor's office. And some of them, they ask me, I have a prescription, but I didn't know what this paper. And I say, that's a prescription. They call it prescription. Did you get this medication? And they say, no, I don't know what that means. Mm. And I try to go take them to the clinic and fix it, that mistake, because of the medication they needed still, and they didn't take it. So I make refill or I make something.
Safi, can I just jump in for a second and say, if we're not careful, Safi will spend the next couple of hours telling you everything she does every day for people in this community. Exactly. She's amazing. I just, just one question, can we do more? Safi is telling you all the little things that need to happen for people in the refugee community, and she does them. You can see why she's beloved. And I imagine, Sarah, that's why, you get hooked up with her, but how did you get introduced to Safi?
Well, I knew I wanted to feature Refugees Helping Refugees. I think it's a really powerful organization, basically for the reasons that Safi was saying. You know, these volunteers have lived the experience as coming here as refugees and understand, they might be given a place to stay, but then where do we go to the store? Where do you go to the hospital? Just trying to understand how to acclimate to a new space, and they can really help them in a way that a lot of other organizations can't. So I knew I wanted to feature the organization, and then I wanted, an important part of this project was that they lived in the city. So I kind of, talked to a couple different women there, all amazing women, but landed with Safi just because of kind of her geography of where she was living. And then, her energy and her warmth. I always say that you can't be around Safi without smiling. She just emanates warmth.
Well, and you're going to see the mural of Safi where, one more time?
It's at Reformation Church at 111 Chestnut Street.
What do you think of it, Safi?
It was good.
Yeah, Imani, is there solidarity? Are you meeting the other women who are featured?
Yes, I am. Yes. It has been such a gift to do some work with Safi, and our community of Reformation is trying to find ways in which we can do some partnership. And I was really proud of our church. I know that's a weird word as a pastor, but I was proud of them for making the decision to honor this Muslim woman on our church, because we are supposed to call and welcome everyone. And so it is an honor to know Safi. And Sarah, again, bridge that gap, as well as all the women that I've met. I'm blown away.
Well, so you can go see the murals. The final one will be done in the spring. Real quick, Sarah Rutherford, you got a minute to tell me who else is on the murals that we haven't met. So the short descriptions of the other women who you feature?
Sure, yeah. So Kaylin Rich will be in the spring. She's a queer feminist, direct action organizer, a writer, sexuality educator. She's also the assistant advocacy director of the New York Civil Liberties Union. And then, so she's the final mural. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then Trelawney McCoy is in the Susan B. Anthony neighborhood. She's an adoptive, foster, and biological mother to 9 children. She also works as a project counselor at University of Rochester, working with young mothers as they navigate towards independence. And that's just the beginning of everything she does.
It's great stuff.
Rachel McKibbins. Yep. She's a poet, activist, mother of 5. She teaches poetry and creative writing. And she also is the founder of Pink Door Writing Retreat, an annual retreat for women of color, as well as Poetry and Pie that she does with her husband. And they also have a space called the Spirit Room, mm-hmm. which everyone should check out, down on State Street.
All right, so the overarching theme in the project is called Her Voice Carries. These murals of these 5 women are now, well, with the exception of Kaylin Rich, which is still in mm-hmm. process, the 4 are viewable now. So if you go to the Memorial Art Gallery, you'll have a chance to not only see them, but also you get a map where you can go around the city, find locations, or jump online at hervoicecarries.blog. You've met Imani O'Lear and Safi Osman this hour. Thank you both for sharing your stories and really appreciate the perspective that you bring to our community. Thank you so much. Maribel Hernandez, who is an artist apprentice with Sarah, doing some of the great work. Congratulations on the work you've done. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
And Sarah Rutherford, the person behind Her Voice Carries, and kind of with the caller. You deserve a lot of love, too. So thanks for coming in and sharing your story.
Thank you so much.
All right. Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, and Megan Mack, producer, Audrey Sample, the intern. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. And we're back with you on Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.